My name is Andy. I'm a grateful recovering addict. I'd like to first thank the CPRC NA 25 for asking a dope fiend like me to come up here and share his experience, his strength, and his hope to a group of people. And let me say first and foremost, I'm not going to be no comedian, so I'm not going to have you laughing. I'm not a storyteller, so I'm not going to have you crying. And if I offend anybody, I'm sorry. I'm only going to talk about me. You know, so here it is. When I was 4 years old in Washington, D.C., I was tall for my age. And what they did was they put me in public school with the five-year-olds. And by me being tall for my age, when we used to line up and have to go anywhere, I would line up in the back of the line. I was 4 years old, and all the kids in front of me was 5 years old. And I used to say, why am I the four-year-old? Why do I have to be in the back? I wanted to be up front where the teacher would hold my hand and protect me. I was in the back, though. And what happened was I developed some coping mechanisms of being in the back at that 4 years old, And what happened was they developed. I started lying about my age when I was 4 years old. I didn't want the 5 years old to say, I'm not going to play with you because you were 4 years old and I don't play with four-year-olds. So I started lying and I was the same age as y'all. I'm 5 years old. And what happened was, my brother was 2 years older than me, and he used to tell him, I am not 5 years old, I'm four. And I used to tell him, who you going to believe, me or him? And that's where it started for me. It started right there, and I started picking up different things. And what happened was I didn't know that I had the disease of addiction at 4 years old. Lying felt good. And so what happened was, that four-year-old kid, right, he started allowing the little girls to look on his paper and cheat. That's what he started doing because I wanted to fit in so bad. So I used to let him cheat. And I was a smart kid. So I used to let him cheat. I was doing multiplication and I was doing addition and subtraction before I even started school. I was the youngest of five boys, and my older brother used to teach me all that stuff, right? And he used to say, I bet my brother can do this 12 timetables. And they used to say, he don't even go to school yet. He'd say, I bet you he can do them. And he used to win money and give me money because I could do my 12 timetables before I started school. You know what I mean? So he used to give me money. He win money. I get money. And man, that was where it started for me. You know what I mean? So what happened was when I got to the second grade, it was two girls and me and this other dude. And you know, like they used to say stuff like, you smart. You real smart. Can I look on your paper when we take the test? And you know, I told you I wanted to fit in. So what I used to do is say, y'all come on back here and sit by me. You know what I mean? And I tell you, it was four of us, two girls and two boys, right? And the teacher called us cheating. Yeah, and what she did was, she said, you the smartest, so I know you was doing it, so you the ringleader. And I tell you, they older than me, and I wasn't the ringleader. I just wanted to fit in. And she said, you gonna stay back. The dumbest one out of all of y'all, we gonna pass her. Yeah, that's what she did. The dumbest one out of all of us, she passed her and kept me back. And two more people. Oh, he said they're towing bikes outside, so if anybody have a bike, you need to go move it or put it in a different parking space or something. Let's talk about that little boy, though. That's only in the second grade. Yeah, so when I got to the fourth grade, I'm talking about an elementary school being in the fourth grade and having these brothers all, you know, like I got four brothers older than me. And all of them used and sold drugs and robbed and cheated and broke into neighbors' houses. And like we was the Johnson boys down the street and didn't nobody want to play with us. And I don't blame them today. Because if you played with us, you was either a Vic or you was with us. And I'm saying we was like robbing the next door neighbors. And we lived in an apartment building. It was four apartments in this building. And they was one-bedroom apartments. And it was like five boys and my mother and father in a one-bedroom apartment. And we did whatever we had to do to survive. And I'm saying, you were a victim in my eyes. Yeah, so when I got to the fourth grade, you know, I ran out the front door and ran around to the back door. And I crept in the kitchen on my brother and them. And they were sitting at the table cutting up. I'm talking about being in the fourth grade. And I don't know nothing about cutting up and all that, right? But now I know what they was doing. And what they did was, I said, now, if you don't give me some, I'm going to tell. And what they did was, me and my partner at the time, they gave us a joint of reefer. Yeah, and so we smoked the reefer, and we got the gigglies, and they was laughing, and, you know, everything was cool. And I'm saying fourth grade. And then I'm talking about after that, man, like Orange Flip came along. You know what I mean? And I'm talking about I was tall for my age. So by the time I was like 14 or 15, I could go to the liquor store. And the lady at the liquor store, I don't want to call her name, but she liked young kids. So she would come in there, you could flirt with her, and she would sell you liquor. And in my day, I'm saying that was a big thing for a kid like me. Go buy a bumper of Colt 45, get a cool Newport, and plug the ashes in the bottle and watch them drop. I'm talking about the insanity that I developed to cope with the things that I was going through. Wasn't no molestation, wasn't no abuse going on, wasn't none of that in my household. Me and my brothers, you know, like we hung together. Everybody else was a victim. That's just how it was. So what happened was the reefer turned to Orange Flip. The Orange Flip turned to, excuse me.
We have a medical emergency. If you're driving any motorcycles in the front of the convention center, we need you to move them now. Excuse me. Sorry. Thank you.
Motorcycles again. But anyway, what happened was one thing led to, and all my brothers was dope fiends besides one. I had one brother, he was not a dope fiend. You know what I mean? So what happened was I had made a conscious decision to start snorting heroin at 15. Yeah. And let me tell you, I had a love affair with heroin at 15. Yeah, the first time I nodded on the corner and the police station was like 20 feet away and I was on the corner nodding for 2 hours. And I had a love affair with heroin that didn't love me back. So what happened was, you know, I started doing things then. Because, see, the heroin gave me courage. And I told you I was that little scared four-year-old boy who was in the back of the line. But when I got to the heroin, I was no longer afraid of anything. That was that false courage. So when you get that false courage in you, right, all you had to do was say, I dare you to do it. That's all you had to tell me. I dare you to do it. And that means whatever go. We was paying insurance man in the front door, running around out the back door, and catching him when he came out the apartment and robbing him before he could get to the next apartment. And now don't you know he knew it was us? But then none of that mattered, cause what? I knew he wasn't gonna tell the police. Cause at the time, you know, it was like a little segregated, so like all the people that was like the teachers and the principals and the doctors and all these people was living in the same neighborhood we was living in. All the police knew who you were. So wasn't no hiding a lot of that stuff. They already knew who you were. You know, so what happened was I started doing some stuff, man. You know, like just robbing. I'm talking about being 15 and being off the hook. I'm talking about like my mother came in the house one day, man, because her and my father had separated. My father moved to Miami and my mother came in the house from work. And all of a sudden her little baby son, he was like all these clothes, all these new clothes and new shoes and all this stuff. And she said, well, where you get that from? And you know what I said? I got it from my brother. She said, well, where did he get it from? I said, I don't know. She said, well, I know where you're going to be at tomorrow. And tomorrow I was in Miami. That's where I was at, with my father. You know what I mean? And she thought that that was going to work. But I need to tell you that soon I got with my father at 15 in Miami in the ghetto, he gave me a gun and said, man, you're going to need it. He said, you don't know nobody here. And man, I'm telling you, they're killing people every day. He said, so you're going to need this. And I was smoking cigarettes. And he said, you don't have to hide that from me. You can smoke right in the house. And I'm talking about being this boy from D.C. down in Miami, man. I'm talking about like going to school in the bathroom, smoking cigarettes and blowing O's. And all the kids used to say, you real fly. Yeah, and that's all I wanted to be was accepted. And they said, man, you all right. And I was all right with that. And I'm talking about, man, like being there, man, and my mother in D.C., my father in Miami, and I'm talking about, like, doing some crazy, crazy stuff, because don't nobody know me here. Yeah, I'm not from Coconut Grove. I'm not from Liberty City. I'm not from Overtown, so I used to go everywhere. Where were the dope was at? And they used to say, who are you? I said, man, I'm from D.C. And they said, man, you all right. And I was all right with that. They said, well, let's go rob. I said, man, let's go rob somebody then. They said, well, let's go get some dope. I said, let's go get some dope. And then they said one time, I said, man, here go $5. Go get me some coke. And the dude went and got me some coke, man. And me and this girl, I was in my drawers. And what happened was I shot the coke, man. And I ran to the hospital in my drawers. I'm talking about I got hit by 3 cars. I'm talking about it jumped on the hood of another car and say, drive. And I'm talking about they driving down the street, man. I said, man, you ain't going fast enough. Go faster. Yeah, I'm talking about, man, they say, man, what do you want us to do? The police said, man, pull your ass over. You can't be riding on no hood or no car. I said, well, man, we're trying to get to the hospital. He said, well, get in the car and I'll give you an escort. Yeah, I'm talking about getting in the hospital and the doctor said, man, what you done did? I said, man, I shot some cocaine. He said, well, man, if you ain't dead now, you ain't going to die. Yeah, he said, ain't nothing we can do for you. And I'm talking about a man having to go back home, man, with my father. At 3 o'clock in the morning. And all my cousins and neighbors said, you know, we saw your son running down the street in his drawers. And how can I explain that to him? So I couldn't. And I said, man, it's too late, man. And I just can't explain to you what happened. He ain't know nothing about that I was a dope fiend. Because I was 15. And a dope fiend. And he didn't understand. You know, and what I'm saying, well, that wasn't even good enough. But I didn't know at the time that there was a savior in my life. Because after that, I never liked cocaine no more. So when crack hit, it said cocaine. I said, I don't want none. So I need to tell you that it was a bad experience, but it wasn't bad for me. Because I'm a dope fiend, and if I use crack, I only can imagine. You know, I'm talking about, man, coming back to D.C., man, and I'm talking about, man, just man, like the police locked me right up when I got back. I'm talking about being 18 years. Oh, well, I came back at 17, and I got locked up, and I escaped from the juvenile joint, and my mother immediately sent me down to Florida again. Because my mother worked at the same juvenile joint that they locked me up at. And so the counselors used to carry me to the hospital every night to see my mother. They used to say shit like, damn, that's your mother? How can I be in the same joint with my mother, you understand me? And they used to say, damn. And I'm my mother's baby. So you know what she did. She gave me money. She gave me everything I wanted. So I couldn't stay there. So I escaped. When she came home from work that day, she said, well, goddamn, when did you get out? I said, well, you know they didn't release me, Ma. She said, oh, shit. You need to go back down with your father. That's what you need to do. So she sent me back down Miami at 17. And I stayed till I was 18. And I was grown. And I came back. I was back about 2 months. My brother had got killed. That's what brought me come back. My brother got killed. I was back. 2 months later, police kicked the door in my mother's house. They locked my ass up. And my mother said, I don't have no more babies no more. I'm gone. Y'all can have it. I don't live here no more. And you cannot live with me. I'm talking about being 18, man. And mom's like said, she gave up. And what I'm saying is, man, the disease of addiction just got worse. I'm talking about like the last time I got locked up in 19, well, I've been locked up from 18 all the way up to whatever, and being locked up in the last time in 1993, the judge barred me out of D.C., period. He said, man, you cannot cross the line of Washington, D.C. no more until you finish with this case in court. That was the stipulation for me making bond. And this was in 1993. He said, man, if you cross the line of D.C., you are immediately going to come into custody again. Because, see, I got this bright idea. I stopped shooting dope in 1987. And I started smoking reefer, and I said, it just ain't that bad. And so when I came home in 1990, I wasn't doing nothing but smoking white boys. You know, the rolled up reefer in the white paper. You know what I mean? And what happened was, I got a bright idea. I said, well, since I'm not shooting dope no more, surely I can sling. Surely I can make some money now. And you know, we dope fiends. We just not shooting dope. We know everybody. We know the ones got it. And we know the ones that want it. I just want to be the middleman. So the same people that was turning me down when I first came home, in about 2 years, they was coming to me copping. And that's when the judge locked my ass up and said, man, you barred out of D.C. And I didn't know at the time that it meant something, because I said, man, fuck that judge. He don't have no power over what I can do. And so the police, you know, to jump out, they knew me. So when I would come to D.C., he used to say shit like, we're going to tell the judge. See, I'm talking about being arrogant, right? Now what I told him was, fuck you in the judge. Well, can we search your car? I said, hell no. He said, well, take your dog out the car because you know I had a pit bull. I said, take him out for what? That's not my car. That's my mother's car. It's in her name. That's her dog. Yeah, you take him out. I see, I'm talking about being that arrogant person. I'm talking about they could already have the authority to lock me up. But see, what happened was it didn't matter. Did nothing matter but getting one more. See, that's the disease of it. It don't matter what it is. Money, cars, women, it don't matter what it is. Drugs, that ain't even important. If it make me feel good, I want more. So what happened was, one more time, I was back down Lawton. Judge talking about giving me life for a dime bag of crack. I'm talking about some real humbling shit to anybody, right? I'm talking about like a dime bag of crack and the judge saying some shit like, you know I can put you away to when you come home, you don't even have to worry about selling nothing else. I'm talking about, man, a four-letter word for a dime bag of crack. Not no ounce of crack. I'm talking about a dime bag of crack that they found around the corner on the ground and came back and gave it to me. And the judge said, do you have anything to say? And you know what we're going to say, right? I told you how I am, right? You know, what I really wanted to say was fuck you in that life too, right? Now that's what I really wanted to say. But I'm still arrogant, right? So what I told the judge was, no. I don't want to talk to none of y'all. And he saw something. I don't know what he saw. He saw something. And he said, man, I'm just not going to give him life for this right here. I just do not see it in my paperwork to give him life. And the prosecutor said, but Your Honor, I object. He said, he don't have a record. He has a book. And he deserves to be off the street for the rest of his life. And the judge said, but I don't see it. He said, do you have any paperwork to say that? He said, no. He said, well, it's my word. And he gave me 4 to 12 years mandatory. I had just done another 4 to 12 years before that. And now I'm back down Lawton one more time with a brand new 4 to 12 years. For a dime bag of crack. And I did not stop using drugs. When I'm in Lawton, it's like being home, and I continue to do what I do. I smoke marijuana every day with blunts, and they don't sell blunts in Lawton. And we smoke blunts every day in law. And we smoke every day so the police used to open up the vents in the back of the dome so that the smoke wouldn't come up front. It was like, if you don't mess with me, I won't mess with you. And that's all it was. But now I got to give some hope. Because we carry the message, right? Right. We carry the message outside the room, so it has to be some hope in there somewhere. Yeah, and here come the hope. The hope is that if a dope fiend like me, I'm talking about, see, I'm a real dope fiend. I'm talking about like the swollen hands. See, I'm missing a finger, right? Right. I'm missing a finger. I used to tell the kids, you know, I used to work with some kids. I used to tell them I got hungry one night and I ate it. Yeah, that's what I told the kids, right? Right. But for real, what happened was, I hit some blood and it was red, and I started pushing the dope in, and I didn't know nothing about pink blood. And what happened was, I kept pushing it, and it was burning, and it was hurting, and I was pushing it, and it was burning, and it was hurting, and I was pushing it, and it was burning, and it was hurting. I said, God damn. And I'm talking about, man, like the finger died, and I still didn't go to the hospital. I'm talking about like having a dead finger on your hand and like it hurting, and you would get ice. I would get ice out the refrigerator and put ice on it, man, to ease the pain, and go shoot some dope and come back and shoot some dope and come back, put some more ice on it. And man, it went on for months. And I'm talking about when I finally went to the hospital, it was just so much pain, man. I said, man, like carry me to the hospital. It was a blizzard. An ambulance came, and when I got to the hospital, man, I said, man, don't even save it or try to save it. Just cut this motherfucker off. It hurts too much. So don't get it twisted about I'm a drug addict. I'm a dope fiend. And I'm a real dope fiend, man. I'm talking about I only walk the alleys at night. See, I'm talking about at the end. I'm talking about like at the end, not even wanting to walk on the street because your feet big, your hands big. You got tracks up and down your arms and abscesses and all kind of shit going on. And like you don't want to walk in the street in the daytime. You only come out at night. And anybody that came across your path was a victim. And that means family, friends, and strangers. Everybody was a goddamn victim. The hope, though, is this little short, little skinny white dude. I'm not going to call him a man. He was just a white dude. Because he's a friend of mine today. He told me one thing. He said, man, are you going to be the chicken that lays the egg and going about his business? Or are you going to be a pig, man, that lay down his life just so you can eat? Which one are you going to be? You have to make that decision. And for the first time in my entire life, somebody said something that I heard. And they say, man, you don't have to live like this again. If you just do what we do, things will get better. And it's the hope. Things got better. I'm talking about, I told you I've been locked up and got the book right. And I'm talking about like tutoring little kids in middle school. I'm talking about like getting a college degree. I'm talking about like I told you I used to do math before I even started the school. I'm talking about like going to college, right? Like math ain't no problem to me. I'm talking about like loving math. You know what I mean? I mean like loving it so much that's the message I carry. See, I'm talking about outside the rooms. And in. Because there's some people in here that then came to me and say, well, man, I need some help. You know what I mean? I done failed this test. I say, well, you should have been and came to me a long time ago. And I need to read something out of the basic text because I got like 5 minutes to go, right? So I need to go to the basic text because what the basic text do, it gives me a guide, right, to like living life. Okay, and I don't have 5 minutes, so I'm going to run through some stuff, right? I'm not even going to start on the first one. I'm going to start on the second one. It says the steps leads us to an awakening of a spiritual nature. This awakening is evidenced by changes in our lives. It says these changes makes us better able to live by spiritual principles and to carry our message of recovery and hope to the addict who still suffers. And what is our message? Our message is that an addict, any addict, you know, like the big hand dope fiend that I am, it seems like an addict. Any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Now, what is our message there? Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. I cannot make it free for you. I can say there's a promise of freedom. If you do what we do, you can be free too. But if you don't, and you go around your buddies, and you want to show them how fat, how good, how all that, I just don't know. You know, I'm saying I'm going to read this last thing, and it's the last thing I'm going to read, right? And what it says is this. It says, relapse and return. Page 265. It says this. Now, this is an addict's experience. He said, I drove loads of patients to meetings, shared with patients about my experience, strength, and hope, and became willing to do God's instrument to speak to. Now, he said, and became patient above my experience, strength, and hope, and became willing to be God's instrument to speak to others any way he chose. Not any way I chose. It's any way that he chose. God, not me. Don't follow me. Follow the God that's in me. I might lead you anywhere at any time, and I don't mean to do it. I just told you if I offend you, I apologize, but don't follow me. Look at what I do, and then you make the determination to do what I do. You might see me in here playing dominoes, cussing somebody out. You might see me doing that. It might not be spiritual to you. But that's what keeps me clean. I've been clean now 13 years, going on 14 years. And I need to put a shout out because I have a cousin that came in and went back out. And I just want to shout out to him, man. I'm not mad at you, but please give yourself a break. I don't care if you're using or what you're doing. Just keep coming back. I did, and it changed. So it'll work for me, it'll work for you. My name is Andy. Thanks for letting me share.